In the autumn of 1929, the United States stood at the edge of a disaster that few Americans fully understood while it was happening. The nation had spent much of the previous decade celebrating prosperity, technological progress, and the exhilarating promise of modern capitalism. Cities glowed with electric lights, factories produced automobiles and household appliances at astonishing speed, radios carried music and advertising into millions of homes, and the stock market seemed to offer ordinary citizens a direct road into wealth. Yet beneath the polished surface of the Roaring Twenties, deep weaknesses had been gathering for years. The stock market crash of 1929 did not create every problem that produced the Great Depression, but it exposed those problems with terrifying force. It shattered confidence, destroyed fortunes, weakened banks, frightened consumers, and marked the dramatic end of an age that had believed economic growth could continue almost without limit. During the 1920s, many Americans came to see the stock market as a symbol of national success. The New York Stock Exchange, located on Wall Street in Lower Manhattan, became more than a financial institution, it became a stage on which the ambitions of the decade played out. Investors watched stock prices rise with an excitement that bordered on faith. Newspapers reported market gains as if they were proof that the United States had entered a new era of permanent abundance. Business leaders spoke confidently about efficiency, scientific management, and mass production. Politicians praised private enterprise and warned against excessive government interference. For millions of people, the rising market seemed to confirm that American capitalism had solved the old problems of scarcity and instability. The optimism of the decade was understandable in some ways. After the hardship of World War I and the economic turbulence that followed it, the United States emerged as the world's leading industrial and financial power. American factories produced enormous quantities of steel, automobiles, chemicals, radios, and consumer goods. Henry Ford and other industrialists had shown how mass production could lower prices and expand markets. The automobile transformed daily life, spreading suburbs, road construction, gasoline stations, motels, and new patterns of leisure. Electricity entered more homes, making possible refrigerators, vacuum cleaners, washing machines, and radios. Advertising encouraged Americans to imagine themselves not only as workers or citizens, but as consumers whose identities could be shaped by what they purchased. However, this prosperity was uneven. Industrial production expanded, but many workers did not receive wages high enough to keep pace with the goods being produced. Farmers, who had expanded production during World War I, faced falling crop prices throughout much of the 1920s. Rural America often lived in a depression before the official Great Depression began. Coal miners, textile workers, and many African American laborers also experienced instability and low wages. The prosperity celebrated in magazines and political speeches was real for some, but fragile or distant for others. This imbalance mattered because a healthy economy depends not only on production but also on purchasing power. When factories produce more goods than consumers can afford to buy, the appearance of strength can hide a dangerous weakness. The stock market, meanwhile, increasingly detached itself from the real condition of the broader economy. During the second half of the 1920s, stock prices rose rapidly. Investors bought shares not only because companies were profitable, but because they expected prices to keep rising. This expectation became self-reinforcing. As prices climbed, more people wanted to buy stocks. Their buying pushed prices higher, which attracted still more investors. The market became a machine of optimism, powered by the belief that tomorrow's prices would always be higher than today's. This was the essence of a speculative bubble. Value was no longer based mainly on earnings, productivity, or long-term prospects, but on confidence that someone else would pay more later. One of the most dangerous practices of the era was buying stocks on margin.